Tonight's Walking Dead recap is sponsored by our friends over at Graze.com. Graze is a snack subscription service that delivers delicious, unique snacks to your work or your home. Now, we know a major plot point on The Walking Dead is, hey, where are we going to get snacks from? The Hilltop, Alexandria, who has the snacks? They have whole wars over this, and it's not that easy in our life, too, to find snacks that are both convenient and healthy when we're on the go. Graze.com wants to show you the tasty side of healthy snacking, and you could try for yourself with for free using the code ROB. Graze.com is a snack service that delivers tasty and nutritious snacks right to your work or home, and all the snacks come in perfectly portioned packs, great for on the go and treating yourself without overdoing it. From savory combos to flapjacks and cookie dippers, they have a vast variety of over 100 unique snack creations. That means there's something new and different to always try, like the turtle pie with raw pecans, vanilla pumpkin seeds, salted caramel milk, and mini cocoa cookies. Of course, Enid was a big fan of the turtle pie. Cookies and cream, mini cocoa cookies, white chocolate buttons, chocolate fudge, and sunflower seeds. When you sign up, browse and rate the snacks to help Graze handpick a personalized box to suit your preferences. And each snack is approved by the in-house nutritionist and contains no artificial colors, flavors, or preservatives, so you can feel good about what you're snacking on. So go to Graze.com, that's Graze.com now, to get that free trial box that includes four of the top-rated and most delicious snacks. Use the special code ROB, that's at Graze.com, promo code ROB, for your free box of delicious snacks. The Walking Dead mid-season finale is over for season 9, and we are just getting started here on the Walking Dead post-show recap here on Post Show Recaps. And now here are the two people who are about to have their podcast molecules fill your ears. I am Rob Sestrino here with Jessica Lees. Jessica, how are you?
Oh, Rob, this is rough. This is really rough. It was high highs and low lows. It was well done storytelling. It was stuff that I can't wait to sit back and hear you rant about for 45 minutes. This was a lot of episode, and I can't wait to unpack
it. High highs and low lows tonight here in Evolution, the season 9 mid-season finale. By the way, I don't know if I gave an accurate description of how sound works. I don't think that if anybody got grossed out, I don't think it's actually podcast molecules in your ear.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that we are just going to gloss over all of that, because I did feel a little invaded there.
Yeah, frankly, I'm not even sure if Negan is right in terms of his scientific assessment, but we don't need to explore that here tonight. Jesus! Jesus!
Oh Jesus.
Jesus! He's gone. He's gone. On the night that somebody actually said, they got a guy named Jesus. What is this, a cult? There's a guy that calls himself there Jesus. Is that a nickname? Is that a real name? I guess we'll never know.
Maybe he's your own personal Jesus.
Yeah. Jess, I felt like things... at no point did I feel like that Jesus was in danger of dying tonight. But then Chris Hardwick came on with his special surprise guest. Who's it going to be? So now that's weird. I don't feel like somebody is due to die tonight. And then once things started to get really slow motion and Matrix speed for Jesus in the graveyard, I felt like, oh, this isn't looking good.
Yeah, this was not particularly well directed, this ouster for Jesus. I think there are ways it could have been a little bit more impactful. Like, I thought the actual moment of his death was pretty cool, and slowing it all down didn't build any kind of tension. It just said, oh, hey, everybody, big neon flashing sign, Jesus gonna die, Jesus gonna die. And mm-hmm. then he died. And I felt like it would have been so much more out of left field if they just left that in the way it was. And you think, well, of course, he's Jesus. He's the best fighter. He's gonna save the day. And he's gonna beat these zombies because they're still zombies, right? And then that moment where he's fighting a guy and the guy ducks his advance and comes up from behind him and stabs him. That is so cool. That is such a cool moment. And it was just like all of the dramatic tension of it was sapped out of it by this like lampshading the fact that Jesus was going to die.
Just let me ask you a question and then let's see, maybe you can answer me now and maybe you'll say, okay, well, let's wait till we get to the comic book zone at the end of the podcast. But was the whole horde that was walking around, was that people wearing zombie masks or were there real zombies mixed in there?
We should save this for the comic book zone because I do not know how much of a spoiler it's going to be.
Okay.
But, and also they may handle it differently on the show.
All right. And if it was everybody that was there was a person wearing a zombie costume, boy, a lot of them stayed in character through their death.
Yeah, that does seem like some of them must have been actual zombies because you did see
there were some real Daniel Day-Lewis's out there that really just did not even attempt to dodge the katanas or the spears or anything like that. Just that one guy. That one guy said, "You know what? I'm moving out of the way. I'm not going to just let Jesus kill me."
Yeah, and I think that's kind of. I think we are meant to believe that some of the members of the herd are dead and some of them are not, because you also saw it at the point where they're coming through that gap in the wall and some of them come out and they just kind of face plant and the rest of them start walking over the top of them. I think that's meant to highlight, okay, some of these people are something more than zombies and some of them are just zombies.
Okay. All right. So maybe a rewatch might be needed of that scene before we really know everything that's going on there. Also, very foggy. I guess it was spooky, but I did really, you know, a lot of these night scenes on The Walking Dead, I struggle with trying to be able to figure out what's going on. Fog did not help me. I was not like, ooh, yeah, fog.
Well, I think you were supposed to feel disoriented, although I thought that's like the cheapest trick in the book. It felt to me like a throwback to those, you know, it was kind of Romero-esque, I thought, but without this sort
of... Caesar Romero-esque?
No. No, not quite, but... I mean, there's still time to bring in some Batman villains. We got some brand new villains for the show, but... You know, who knows? Maybe the Joker will join the ranks of Negan next season. I don't know.
Okay. Jesus is gone. Jess, I feel like that this was too soon for Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, Jesus going out in a blaze of glory very early in his life, cut tragically short by a horde of enemies. It's always painful.
This was a senseless death.
It was senseless. It was, but I think we need it. We need the death of Jesus here at this point in the story.
Okay. Because just, I don't even know if I could tell you Jesus's arc on The Walking Dead. I mean, he came along, what was it? Season 5, I want to say that he showed up. He was a, you know, strange, mysterious newcomer. He was sort of our entryway into the hilltop. And we got through him. We followed him back there. We got to meet Gregory. They sent everybody out on an assignment. Hey, could you kill all these people that are bothering us? Sure, no problem. And then we went to the outpost and killed a bunch of people. And then ultimately, after that, Jesus sort of became a major pacifist. He did not like anybody being killed. And then he makes it through, the all-out war. And then 6-year time jump. And then a couple of days later, he made it through the whole time jump and then dead.
Well, Rob, I think there's a couple of things in there. I think your initial question is a very good one. What is Jesus's actual arc? But I think there's a couple of things we have to unpack. And the first thing is that in the era, you know, of the Negan War, nobody had an arc. Everybody was just Scott Gimple, like throwing darts
nobody
at a wall.
Nobody had an arc.
Who's going to want to kill people and who's going to be a pacifist? Okay, Jesus, you're a pacifist. Rick, you want to kill people. No, wait, Rick doesn't want to kill people. No, wait, he does. And that was just how we played it for two entire seasons.
Okay.
And you could almost just skip ahead to the time jump at any point where you felt like it. But I think the thing that we tried to do, and I think this is something that Angela Kang as a showrunner has been very, very good at this season half, is looking back and trying to find those loose ends at the point where everything started to go off the rails and try to kind of bring them all back together. And there was a really masterful scene, I think, that did attempt to do that, where you had Aaron and Jesus talking about this and kind of like talking about Daryl off in the middle distance and saying, you know, we're the kind of people that want to bring everyone together. And that was Jesus's whole thing when we first met him, mm-hmm. was he was the guy that brings us into the hilltop and introduces us to a whole new world of people. And he even says, you know, there's more communities out there than you know. And he's the guy that knows who all the communities are. And he knows what they're like and who is to be trusted and who's not. And he brings them all together, the people that he can count on. And he's kind of almost the person that instigates this whole Negan War. And I think his arc is sort of that we're now at a point where everybody is fractured and splintered, and he has always felt this ache to bring everybody back into the fold. And now with his death, that kind of puts everything back up in the air again. Is his death going to be the rallying point that Rick's death obviously wasn't?
Yeah. So we record these episodes right after the show ends. And so there is always, you know, news that's going on around the time that we are recording. So just our colleague, Josh Wigler, has posted an interview with Jesus himself, the great Tom Paine. And interestingly, it sounds like from the article that maybe Tom Paine, Jesus himself, may have wanted an exit strategy from The Walking Dead.
Well, that's certainly possible as well. Mm-hmm. That seems about right. I mean, they hadn't given him very much to do up until this season.
Yes.
For a long time. So it's like, okay, I'm a series regular. I'm tied to this. I got to go down to Georgia for a few months every year to shoot, 10 seconds of actual footage?
Yeah.
And he's a talented guy. He could be doing anything he wants. So he's like, yeah, okay, I think my usefulness is at an end. So when there's a point where it's logical to write me out. I think that totally makes sense.
Yeah. So, of course, you could read the full interview with Tom Paine that Josh has up at THR.com or by following Josh on Twitter at Round Howard. The headline here, Walking Dead star gets candid about his exit. It was constant frustration. Josh asked, was it your choice to leave The Walking Dead or was this a decision from the writers? He said, they were aware I wouldn't be unhappy if they got rid of me. I expressed unhappiness last season. I was very frustrated with what the character had been doing. He arrived in a very cool way, and then he floundered at the hilltop. During the war with the Saviors, the only person he had a fight with was a man who was on his side, and that was Morgan. In the comics, he has this massive fight with Negan. He catches a grenade. He throws it back. He's the most capable member of the entire group, and he wasn't used at all on the show. Sounds like Tom Paine did not really love what they were doing with Jesus.
I think that's a fair criticism.
Yeah.
And I remember back when Josh and I were doing Walking Dead book club every week, the first appearance of Jesus, we were both so hyped to see him. And we were both looking forward to so much fun times with Jesus. The casting was perfect. The fight scenes looked awesome. And then nothing happened. So I totally get it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, that Tom Paine is saying the same thing we are with Jesus.
Yeah. But all of that being said, I do think this was a great character to lose at this point. And I think it serves the narrative really well.
Okay. All right. So for Jesus, it looked like that we were about to see a relationship blossoming potentially between him and Aaron. Aaron was very upset when we lost Jesus tonight, but ultimately we do not get that that relationship to play out on the show.
Which is unfortunate, because I don't think we need to wait for the comic book zone to talk about a thing that from the comics that's obviously not going to happen. But that was canon in the comics, and I was here for it.
Okay, so Jesus is gone, and we'll see where we go from here. Of course, I mean, anything else? I mean, I don't want to move on until we've given Jesus his due.
Well, yeah, I mean, we certainly have to respect Jesus here, but.
You don't think he's going to be back next season, right?
I don't think we're going to see him again in three episodes, if that's what you're hinting at.
Okay. And there was no dumpster. I just want to make sure. It looked like he died. He appeared to be stabbed. People were sad. Is there any chance, Jess, and I have to ask this, is there any chance that Jesus survived this?
Well, you know, they play so many tricks on us on this show, but I think we got to go with habeas corpus here because he was certainly still there. He didn't roll under a dumpster. I guess they could always have this sort of, you know, next season he shows up and he's like got a big bandage like, oh, it's a good thing that sword missed your spleen, Jesus. I don't think that's going to happen. I think he looks pretty dead.
Jess, what is the line of secession at the Hilltop? Is Tara the new leader of the Hilltop?
Well, I think Tara was vice president of the Hilltop, so I would guess that responsibility now falls to her. But it was also one of those situations where Jesus was kind of the temporary leader for a really long time, and she was the temporary assistant leader. So now she's going to be the temporary leader, and I don't know how long she hangs on to that. It could be that there's a power vacuum at the Hilltop now and someone could rush in to claim it because Tara's going to be overwhelmed. She was already overwhelmed and she had Jesus there. And now without him, who knows?
Why? Who's going to run in and take the leadership at the Hilltop?
Well, that's the definition of a power vacuum, Rob. There is nobody.
yeah. And it's a wide open field to challenge. Is somebody going to primary Tara?
It could be. I mean, who knows?
I nominate Enid.
Hey, Enid is living her best life, Rob. We got to talk about Enid.
Yeah, we'll get there. I don't want to get sucked into the Enid and Henry vortex just yet. Let's talk about our top stories at this hour. And so we saw Daryl. He led this expedition against all of the walkers, and we discover, okay, something new is going on here. Do we need to dig in more in terms of we discovered that there are people that are wearing masks that are dressed like walkers?
I think that's pretty much the big reveal this week, and it's really comic book readers have been waiting for this for a while, and non-comic book readers had to be a little bit puzzled as to what was going on these past couple of episodes. And to get the reveal, I thought it was a really cool way to make that reveal, because even up to the point where we lose Jesus, you're still not sure what's going on. Like, these could be walkers that are starting to regain their facilities. I mean, I don't know if you have seen the movie Warm Bodies, Rob.
I have not.
The premise of that movie is basically you have a bunch of zombies, you have the zombie apocalypse, and then you have a zombie that falls in love with a human survivor and regains his humanity.
Oh.
And so anybody that's seen that might be watching this thinking, oh, are these like Warm Body zombies that are starting to come back to themselves? And what does that mean for the universe? That could be a weird possibility. Or are they evolving into like super zombies like Eugene seems to think? And that's all really super weird. And so it's almost a relief when you know it's just a human in a zombie suit. And to have that dropped on you as, well, that's the only thing it could be at this point, because, you know, they didn't evolve to have super zombie ninja skills at that point. Like, that's the point where, you know, for sure it's a human. And then when they take the mask off, it's like, yep, it's a human. OK, that's our big reveal of the episode. Like, that's kind of our top story.
Jess, I didn't like that they made Eugene the person who was floating the theory of zombie evolution. I mean, I think that Eugene is a pretty smart guy. And I feel like that, I mean, evolution doesn't just happen as like a specific, you know, a species gets older. Like these walkers don't look like they're fresh. Like, why would dead bodies evolve and get new powers?
Well, I think Eugene himself explains this away pretty well. And if anybody's going to have a crackpot theory with a lot of like long-winded evidence to back it up, it's going to be Eugene. So I didn't hate that. But he notes that this is not a logical thing that happens to begin with. And you've heard me rant about this all the time. These are not, they're not dead. They don't run out of energy. They're perpetual motion machines. Their brains are still somehow alive. I think it's okay that Eugene's the person that came up with this because he's the only one with enough imagination to come up with it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just, were you concerned about Dog tonight?
I was a little concerned for Dog, but it looks like Daryl and Dog have been in that situation before.
They know what's going on.
Yeah. And Dog and Daryl are a good team. I like this pairing.
Okay. Another big headline at this hour. Negan is out of the jail. What happened? Father Gabriel was too distracted, forgot to lock the cell.
Yeah, you really, Father Gabriel has not been good at anything we've ever given him to do. Like, he's a terrible meditation coach. You know, he was cowardly on all of his expeditions.
Not great.
Not great. Not great. He just gets a little bit flustered when Negan implies that he might have heard something about Rosita, and then all of a sudden it's like, he completely forgets the whole point of his job down there is to lock the door behind him.
Yeah. I'm a little disappointed in sort of like the evolution of Negan here, Jess, that I felt like that when we saw Negan and he was, you know, talking about to Judith about her homework. Like, I kind of like that Negan, but I sort of feel like that Negan is like exactly back to the same Negan that Rick was talking to at the start of this season. I feel like that Negan has not changed.
Well, we got to go to the comic book zone for this one, Rob, but I think there's room in there for Negan to have examined his life.
Mm-hmm.
And I maybe at the end of all that examination, he says, I like the guy I was. I'm going to keep being that guy. That's certainly one way to go about it.
Mm-hmm. Do you like that Negan is without a baseball bat, but now has a glove?
That's interesting.
Has he named the glove?
That's also interesting. I hadn't thought of that, but that's.
But he has a tennis ball.
Yeah, he's going to need to trade the tennis ball in, or maybe he's going to need to like soup up the tennis ball somehow. Maybe his new weapon is a ranged weapon.
Yeah, maybe he gets into a showdown with Daryl and Dog, and then he just like chucks the tennis ball and then loses Dog.
Yeah, it's Dog's one weakness.
Daryl will not be able to control Dog if Negan has the tennis ball. He will follow Negan to the end of the earth as long as Negan holds onto that tennis ball. Yeah. I like Negan, but I just feel like I was a little disappointed in terms of like I kind of thought that we were going to see Negan turn over a new leaf, but Negan is still Negan.
Well, what's Negan going to do now? That's the big question mark, right?
Yeah. So we'll see what Negan is doing. It does seem like from the clip we saw that he is headed back to the sanctuary.
It looks like he gets some sort of stick. I don't know if that's Lucille, but he's got something over his shoulder.
Okay. Jess, we spent a lot of time tonight at the hilltop, and we saw Carol bring Henry over there, and he began his blacksmith apprenticeship, and things seemed like they were going okay with Mr. Blacksmith, but things started to go awry once we learned that Henry has fallen into a love triangle with Enid and Alden.
Oh, that's rough because that's a battle that Henry's not going to win.
No, he's not. Enid's not going to give Henry the time of day. And unfortunately, that this is a kid with some issues.
Hey, good for Enid. That's all I got to say, because you know my feelings about Alden.
Why you're pro Alden?
I'm pro Alden. And so, you know, if Enid can get it, good for her. More power to her.
Right. Again, I don't know what the ages are of everybody, but I think we did the math that Enid is like around 22 years old or something like that in the last episode. And how old is Henry? Like 15?
Yeah, he could be 16.
Okay, he could be 16. And Alden is a grown ass man, right?
Yeah. Look, when I was 22, I dated lots of guys in their 30s. So I think it's okay.
Okay. All right. Well, in terms of, I mean, I'm not even saying Enid is doing anything wrong here. I'm just saying that Enid is, looking up Henry after he gets off his blacksmith shift.
Probably not. And I mean, Alden's even a better blacksmither.
Yeah. So he's probably better at everything.
Yeah.
Because Henry is the worst. Right.
Yeah.
All right. So Henry has made some new friends. Enter your new favorite Walking Dead characters. Forget about Magna's group. How about Gage's group? Gage, Addie, and Rodney.
Gage is like the Billy Zabka of the Walking Dead universe.
What is going on here in the Walking Dead writers room? And I know this is in the comic book zone, but are Gage, Addie, and Rodney Walking Dead comic book characters?
Not as such, but there are similarities to be sure.
And now Henry is hanging out with the kids from the wrong side of the tracks. And guess what? They sneak out of the hilltop at nighttime to go drink moonshine. And I wouldn't even complain as much about this, but we already had this same exact storyline on Fear the Walking Dead when we were at the Otto camp. And we saw Alicia had the same exact story, except these kids didn't smoke weed and have a decapitated zombie head. These kids have moonshine and a pit with a walker with arrows.
Yeah. And look how well it turned out for those kids at the ranch.
I mean, it is, Jess, am I crazy? Is this not literally the exact same story that already happened on the other Walking Dead?
It is pretty much beat for beat the exact same thing. Right down to the like, oh, I don't really want to torture the walker. I'm too good for that. I'm going to go home now and face my consequences.
Yeah, and you knew exactly where it was going, where it was like, well, what do you guys do for fun? It's like, oh, here comes something dangerous with the walkers. And what is wrong with these kids that they dug a pit and then put a zombie in down there? Is that the pit that Rick and Daryl fell into, that was these kids when they were little? That's where they got started with this?
Well, I wondered the same thing, but they said a few years ago, and this was like 6 years ago, that Rick and Daryl fell into that pit, and that pit looked pretty fresh.
Just what do they do with this walker that fell in the pit? And how did Henry get out of the hole?
They play ring toss, and I guess Henry has a stick. He can get out of the hole.
He can get out of the hole? I mean, it looked like it was like a deep hole, and Henry was pretty inebriated.
He was kind of white girl wasted.
Yeah, he was. And then are we going to see the last of these kids? I mean, what is going on here? Who wanted this?
Maybe the network said that they're not bringing in enough young viewers.
Yeah, everybody is too old on The Walking Dead. Scott Gimple, that he has already come out and said, you see, the characters of Gage, Addie, and Rodney, their backstory will be explored in a 10-part miniseries coming in February.
It's going to be The Walking Dead's answer to Riverdale. It's going to be like the gritty teenage reboot of The Walking Dead universe.
Yes, yes. Gage, Addie, Rodney, and Henry. Now, what's the next step here? We're going to see then in the season premiere that Gage, Addie, and Rodney are going to be like, hey, not cool, Henry. He didn't give them up, but he's like, you walked out of our moonshine party. So now we're going to bully you.
Yeah, now you're not cool anymore. And he's going to find mean words written on his locker at the blacksmith place.
Yeah. Although Addie seemed like she kind of had a thing for Henry.
Yeah, well, that's probably going to go south. There's probably going to be a love triangle there. Mm. And, you know, she's going to be trying to choose between the intriguing newcomer with the moral compass and, you know, Gage, the good looking bad boy who can't act his way out of a paper bag.
I did like it when they brought him up there and they're like, oh, yeah, we remember you. You're the kid with the stick, right?
Yeah, well, it's a small town, Rob. Anything anybody does in a small town, everybody knows your business right away.
Yeah. Was it Rodney that said he wanted to go check out Oceanside, or was that Gage? Because, hey, is it true what they say about Oceanside?
Yeah. I don't know which one of them it was, but it was just like, okay, keep it in your pants, guy. But on the other hand, if there's only three teenagers in the whole community, and two of them are dudes and one is a nerdy girl,
mm-hmm.
I guess maybe it's like, let's see if there are any girls over there that don't need glasses, if you know what I mean.
Jess, I don't know what you're talking about. A nerdy girl. Addie is the Hilltop homecoming queen for the fourth year running.
Hey, I think Addie has the potential to be pretty awesome, but I also think she has the potential to be that character in every 80s teen movie where she might be cute if she lost the glasses, but until she does, she's only going to be the best friend.
Yes. So Addie is like, Henry doesn't notice me. That I'm around here all the time and Henry doesn't even care about me. And then Enid's like, all right, I'm going to show you what to do. Take off those glasses, Addie.
And then there's like a slow motion shot. They use the same slow motion camera they did for the death of Jesus. And yeah. She shakes out her curls and all of a sudden she's a goddess.
Yes. Wait, what's this? What are you doing to me? Relax, Addie. It's called lipstick. Watch this. and then we'll have the slow motion. And then Jesus is like, no, not slow motion.
And then the whisperer turns around and punches the air. And you hear Simple Minds start up in the background.
This is a great spinoff.
Wow. Yeah. Give Gimple a raise. That one's amazing. Yeah. Okay.
I don't have TV, but if I did, I would definitely watch this spinoff. This is way better than anything on my window.
You know, we could have this, like, this could be the framing device. You know, the way that when they brought back the Good Morning Miss Bliss episodes and had Zach Morris at the beginning introducing them, like, remember when we were in middle school and we did this cool thing? They could have Negan being like, remember when I was looking out my window and I saw this teenage drama?
There's so many things that are happening every day at the Hilltop. Just the other day, I remember those troubled kids and they were met a new kid named Henry. I like that kid.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. Like, fire Gimple, bring us on. We have the answers.
Bring Negan on as the director of programming that he knows he loves TV.
Yeah, I mean, that guy, I knew there was a reason I liked him, and mm-hmm. Yeah. We both love TV.
What do you think was Negan's favorite show before everything went sideways?
I think Negan probably really liked The Wire.
The Wire, yeah.
But I think he drew all of the wrong conclusions from it.
Institutions are evil. Okay. I can fix the problems. I feel like he was a community guy.
Yeah, I could see that too, but he probably drew the wrong conclusions from that as well.
What was the wrong conclusion?
That every good show deserves six seasons in a movie.
Six. I could do that standing on my head. More like six movies and 100 seasons. Okay. Yeah, all right, Jess, we're getting...
Gimple watched Community and turned through the wrong conclusions. Getting off the rails here.
We're way off. Yeah, mid-season.
Let's go back. Yeah.
Mid-season finale. Okay.
Mid-season finale. Go back to Henry for a second, because I know how many feelings you have about the whole Henry arc and all this stuff, but I dare say they did one thing really well that I liked... as a narrative geek.
Yes.
I like that they throw him in the exact same cell that Earl was in at the beginning of the season. And the reason that Earl gives him a second chance is not because he has this great speech about how much it means to his family, but because Earl remembers what it was like to do something stupid and get thrown in that cell.
Get all drunk.
Yep. And yeah. So he's going to show that mercy to Henry. And that's why we saw that whole thing at the beginning. And this is the payoff. And I liked that very much.
I like it from a, you know, writing perspective, but in terms of, you know, the payoff from either half of that storyline, like it was nice they set something up and then paid it off, but either side of that story did not really do anything for me.
Well, and maybe that's the problem. Like maybe I was so starved for something to get resolved in all of that morass that was two entire seasons of Walking Dead that maybe.
Well, you sound like Tom Payne.
Hey, I'm Team Jesus. What can I say?
What would Jesus do?
Yeah. What would Jesus do? He'd leave the show.
Okay.
And so that's my shout out to all those people that said, if you hate the show so much, why are you still watching it? That's why I'm still watching it, because I finally got to see something pay off this episode. Thank you very much.
Yeah. And I have to say that, you know, while I am complaining that I really did like that, if you would have told me that we would end up in this episode where Negan out of jail, Henry in jail, I'll take that any day of the week.
Yeah, I guess that's an upgrade.
Upgrade. Big upgrade of, you know, let's keep Henry in the cell. He's only going to be in there for 2 days. Get Negan out and about. I feel like that is we're headed in the right direction. Michonne had a quiet finale, Jess.
Yeah, but there's a lot. I have a rant brewing about the whole Michonne thing, which this is. It feels very Gimple-esque what Michonne is doing right now.
What?
Because she's stomping around all angry, like, I don't want to have anything to do with these other people at these other communities, and we don't talk anymore because of the thing that happened. I take care of my people and not your people because we all lost people in the thing that happened. And you get to mention the thing that happened once before you have to tell us what the thing that happened is. Otherwise, we're watching the whole thing between the dam and the diamond and Fear the Walking Dead. And we all know how that turned out for everybody. And the answer was not good. You have to reveal a little bit more every time you bring it back up, because otherwise you're not ratcheting up tension. You're not making us more intrigued. You're just spinning your wheels. And I just want to know, I just want someone to spit it out. What is the thing that happened that caused everybody to fracture? And who did they lose? What are they upset about? And how do we fix it so that we could all get back on the same page and be a show again?
Yeah. Any thoughts? You have a theory?
I mean, my theory is that it ties into whatever happened to make the sanctuary not a community anymore. And okay, we saw a hint of that. And that's a big question mark there. And the other big question mark, the two big question marks on the board are what happened to the sanctuary and what happened to make Alexandria not want to talk to Hilltop Kingdom or Oceanside. And I think there must have been some sort of calamity that rained down upon the sanctuary and fractured them, sent Daryl off into the woods to look for Rick for 6 years, and sent Alexandria into a tailspin where they disagreed so fervently with something that Maggie or Ezekiel, probably Maggie, considering the antipathy that was there when Michonne rolled up. Mm-hmm. There's something happened between Michonne and Maggie. They disagreed vehemently on how to deal with the thing that was coming down on them. And there were consequences, and each blames the other for those consequences. And hence, Alexandria doesn't want anything to do with the fair. That's where I think we're at, but I need that spelled out. I need to know what those things are. I need to know what those pieces are. Otherwise, just drop it entirely and pretend that it didn't happen.
Jess, how will Jesus's death affect the fair planning?
Well, I don't think Jesus was the head of the fair committee, was he? Mm. He was into the idea, but I think he was more of a supporter than an actual like party planning committee member.
Yeah, but he was a key cog in the fair planning.
He was a key cog in like Hilltop's role in it, which will be interesting. Because I guess the fair was kind of taking him away from the duties that he was dumping onto Tara.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So if Tara now also has to plan a fair on top of everything else she's doing, that could be rough.
Yeah. I bet those teenagers are going to try to get all crunked during the fair. They better be on the lookout for that.
Yep. Yep. And you know what a good time the fair can be, Rob.
The fair can be fun, but you know, you got to cut down on that underage drinking. People are counting on you, Henry.
Yep. And Henry's going to have to spread the message that it's not okay to drink when you're underage.
Yeah. So good to note. Eugene, we got him back. No worse for wear, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's got to fix that knee, but
yeah.
I don't quite understand. They said, well, can't we just pop it back in? And he's like, oh, no, we can't do that because there's a herd coming. All right. OK, so you could just pop it back in.
But Jess, can we speak at all to what happened here with Eugene, where that he was caught presumably by the bad guys and they took him to a barn and stuffed him in a spider hole?
No, that's not what happened.
He escaped.
We are meant to believe at the beginning of the episode going in, we are meant to believe he's been taken prisoner by the bad guys, but that's not what happened.
What happened?
Rosita explains it all. Rosita, which, by the way, that's my other teen spinoff in the Walking Dead universe. Call me Gimple. Rosita explains it to them.
Yeah.
Rosita explains it to them that when she saw that the herd was gaining on them, and it would continue to look for them. She knew she would be slowed down by having to continue to watch out for Eugene. So she stashed him in the cellar in the barn and then went to get help herself. And that's exactly what happened. She found the people from the Hilltop. She got to the Hilltop. She said, I'll tell you exactly where he is. I know where he is. I know where I left him. If he'd been taken prisoner by the bad guys, she wouldn't have known that.
Okay. All right. Well, thank goodness.
So that's what happened to Eugene, and it's a better outcome for him. But I think we are meant to think that he's been taken prisoner by these evolved walkers at the beginning of the episode. And then by the end, you know, two pieces of information that you didn't, which are A, that he wasn't taken prisoner, and B, that they're not evolved walkers.
And then that's when Rosita lost consciousness after she got back to safety.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
All right. Father Gabriel was visibly upset.
Yeah, I don't know if he's upset because he almost lost her or because Negan said that she might be cheating on him.
And nobody else can watch Negan. Father Gabriel can't get away for that. Like, there's nobody that can just or they can just like put a sandwich there for Negan and say, hi, I'll be back tomorrow.
I think Negan really made everybody else so uncomfortable that Father Gabriel's the only one that'll deal with him anymore.
Well, why does he need, you know, they didn't used to do 24/7 surveillance of Negan.
Yeah, they don't need 24/7. They just need to check on him once a day to make sure he's not dead.
Mm-hmm. Because then ultimately he gets out when nobody is watching him. So obviously they do not have 24/7 surveillance of Negan.
Well, I think part of the problem was there was a bunch of people down there, and I think maybe all the confusion rattled everybody, got them out of their routines.
Yeah. Also, older Judith, we got her, what, in one episode here?
Yeah, you'd think that they could let Judith handle throwing a sandwich to Negan.
Yeah, she's the star of the show. What are you guys doing?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe she's developing her own spinoff.
Yeah. Listen, everybody, that this is your Mary Kate and Ashley Olsen right now. All right. She's the star.
She's your Steve Urkel.
Yeah. So start treating her with a little respect.
No kidding.
Okay. Jess, anything else from the mid-season finale?
Well, I had a couple of cool, tiny things that I want to touch on. I think we're going to see something happen. We saw Carol on her way back to the kingdom pick up a passenger. So that's going to be potentially okay. I like Diane. She's one of my favorite, like, Z-list characters. She's apparently moving back to the kingdom from the hilltop after she moved to the hilltop. Yeah, and that really confused me, by the way, at the beginning of this time jump. I was like, I thought she was a kingdom person and she's at the hilltop. And that was a little cognitive dissonance, but she's going to resolve that for us. And the two of them, I would like to see that road trip. Like, that's a Thelma and Louise movie that we could do.
Carol and Diane?
Yep, Carol and Diane. Okay. I'm here for it. I very much liked Aaron fighting these walkers, and one of them tried to bite his arm, but it was his fake arm, and so it got
Yes, that was good. That was good. Even through the fog, I was able to see that.
Yeah, I was a big fan of that. So those are the two tiny things I wanted to make sure we didn't forget to touch on.
Okay. All right. So just the Walking Dead proper will return in February to AMC. Do you think that we are now going to be thrown into a new altercation with whatever we learned about tonight?
I think so. I think we're going to have two parallel storylines building up to what I think is going to be a pretty epic season finale.
With the fair.
So I think one thing that's happening is the fair. And how are we going to get everybody on board for the fair? Is the fair going to come off with all the communities together? Is Michonne going to finally tell us why she's mad at everybody? Are we going to get any resolution to that? And how is everybody going to come together around this fair? That's one thing. And the other thing is, who are these new enemies? Are we in their territory or have they encroached on ours? What is their deal and how do we resolve that conflict?
Okay. And are you excited? I know we came into this season 9. We knew we were going to have to deal with the loss of Rick Grimes. We're going to have to deal with the loss of Maggie eventually. They kind of just yada yada that. I didn't really deal with it. Ultimately, we lost Jesus as well. Jess, could you give a letter grade to this first half of the season 9 season?
I think
you could do it in two parts if you want to.
Like pre time jump and post time jump.
Yes.
Pre second time jump, post second time jump. Because let's be real, we got two time jumps in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would say I think everything leading up to the departure of Rick, I'm gonna give a solid B to.
Yeah.
And everything after that, I'm gonna give a B+.
B+.
Because I think we feel like, and we've been burned by this before, I know, like to almost reboot the series is a really risky move and it can start strong and then fizzle out pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're going somewhere good. We have enough of the original core cast around that it doesn't feel like a totally different show yet. And I think we've been kind of told why we're coming back into the story at this point in time and what is important now and how are we going to go back to what happened before in a way that feels satisfying. I think we're going to get all that. And I feel confident that we're being placed in the right place to receive it. So I think this is a huge improvement over the last couple of seasons of the show. I feel like if there's anybody that was hating the show and hating their life because they were watching the show and stopped watching the show, it's okay to come back now and give it another shot. Like, give this season another shot. And if you hate it, go away and don't come back. But if you're intrigued, stick around. We'd be happy to have you on board and talk about it.
I do believe last week's episode was a new low in terms of the ratings of The Walking Dead.
Well, Rob, can you blame people?
Series low. Well, I do think that there was the hope, maybe, that the reboot was going to, you know, bring some new life to the show.
Yeah, but you also can't blame people for they've lost the biggest star on the show. And yes, they lost him in such a terrible way that you ranted about it for 45 solid minutes without letting me speak. And if you were that upset, imagine how upset a casual viewer who just watches it because that Andrew Lincoln guy is kind of cute. Imagine how that person feels.
You are welcome to interrupt me at any point.
Oh, I know, but you were having fun.
Okay. Just want to make that. I want to be clear about that. Feel free.
You were having fun.
Yes.
You were loving to hate it. And I felt the joy and I wanted to keep the joy going. But yeah, think about that. Like, think about somebody that isn't deeply invested in it and just watches it for the entertainment and then loses this guy and is told, oh, yeah, you're going to have to watch all these other movies to find out what happens to him and this other character that nobody likes. I would stop watching the show at that point, but I am loyal to you and to this project that we have.
Yeah.
So that's your answer to everybody that's like, if you guys hate it so much, why are you still watching it? I don't hate it anymore. It's going to be okay.
It's going to be okay.
I think we've been more than fair this past season. So I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes next. I think we've got a lot of interesting pieces in play. There's a lot of things that they're explaining badly, but I hope they just explain them and move on.
Okay. Jess, anything else you want to say before we get into tonight's comic book zone?
I think I'm ready for the comic book zone because I have a lot of thoughts.
All right. So with that said, we will dive into talking about the big events from tonight's episode as they were described in Robert Kirkman's wonderful Walking Dead comic book. So let's go and visit the comic book zone courtesy of the anthem composed by Mr. Colin Latchford.
Comic Book Zone. Tune out now as spoilers aren't what you want to know. Avoid hearing plot points about Rick or Michonne. Now's the last chance to turn off during the intro. Comic Book Zone.
Yes. Okay, Jess. Here we are. Let's talk about Whisperers.
Yes. Where are they?
Where do they go? Where's that guy?
Are these guys all zombies or some of them humans or are they all humans?
Let's kill Jesus.
Let's duck that awesome ninja move.
And then let's go find those teenagers with a moonshine.
That looked pretty delicious.
All right.
All right. Yes.
All right. So, tell me.
All right. Let's start with the teenagers. Because I know you want to know about the teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know it's your favorite part.
It is.
There's so much stupid teenage drama in the comics, you don't even know. Robert Kirkman has never met a teenager in his life.
Mm.
And yet he devotes entire issues to this one likes this one, but this one doesn't notice it. But these ones are a bad element and they're bad influences on the good guy who really needs to notice the girl that's right in front of him. But, oh, there's this other girl. And shut up, Kirkman. It's so teen soapy. It's like he watched a few episodes of Saved by the Bell. And he's like, that's how teenagers behave.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
it's pretty much the worst writing that he does, like next to any time there's like any kind of sexual goings on, like the whole part of the prison where everybody was pairing off and having sex every other day. That was pretty bad. And this is like the second worst thing.
Yeah.
Yes. So, yeah,
with these child actors on the show, sometimes, you know, you have a, you know, it's like you lightning strikes and you have like one, like the kid on the show is actually like a really good actor. You get lucky. But when you start having, you know, scenes with three kids, four kids, no way that you're going to get four kids that are going to be good actors.
Yeah. And I think you should have learned that when we were in Alexandria and Carl was getting mixed up with like Enid's original gang. And like the kid who was Sam's older brother who got shot in the head and Sam himself. And it was all really badly done. And you would think that we'd shy away from these things, but we're introducing this gang of teens. And apparently Addie is going to be an analog for Sophia in the comics, who is Carl's best friend, who he really should notice, but he's too busy being distracted by this other girl that we haven't met yet. And I think that's kind of what we're getting at here. Like Henry is kind of into this Addie girl, but he's going to meet a new girl who's going to blow his mind, make him even forget about Enid.
Whoa.
Yeah. So that's coming.
How many kids are going to be on this show?
kids are taking over, man. It's Saved by the Bell, the new class up in here.
Yeah. I didn't even watch Saved by the Bell, the new class. And I love Saved by the Bell.
I think I've got a new thing for the Robin Akiva wheel then.
Oh, boy. Did it make it season 3, episode 7?
I do not know, but however far it made it, I think you need to watch it. Actually, you don't need to watch it. Nobody needs to watch it.
Nobody needs to watch it.
And yeah. I watched enough of the college years to know that OG Saved by the Bell is the only Saved by the Bell that matters.
But yeah, only one season. Yeah, only one season of the college years. But look, we only have one great child actor on this show, and we are not using her.
Now, Mini Judith needs to step in and set this all right.
Yes, Mini Judith, they really, listen to me. You guys want to get the ratings back on track. The whole show should be called Little Ass Kicker, the Young Judith. She's like old Judith. It's hard to describe because she used to be a baby. She's young, though, but now she's old. So... Yeah. But Judith is the face of The Walking Dead moving forward. Sorry, Daryl. Sorry, Dog. Sorry, Carol. Sorry, Michonne, that this is your savior and you're not using her.
It's like we need a little bit less Unforgiven, a little bit more Young Guns.
Yes. You want to get young people watching. You want to get Generation Z tuning into this show. They want to see Judith.
Well, it's sort of like last episode. They were like, yeah, we need something a little more teenagery. Let's bring back teen heartthrob C. Thomas Howell for 5 seconds.
Yeah. Don't you want to see Judith go toe to toe with Negan next season?
I definitely want to see that.
Yeah. Oh, what are you, a 9-year-old girl?
Yeah. And then she's like, yeah, now you kick your ass.
Yeah.
And then she takes him down. I'm here for that. That's amazing. So that's one thing. If you liked teen drama this episode, get ready, buckle up. You're getting a whole lot more of that coming up. There's going to be a teenage girl in the Whisperers.
Jess, what is the point of the Whisperers? What are they doing?
Yeah, I see. I hated the Whisperers.
I don't get it. Like,
I never really fully got them either, but here's what they do. They kill walkers.
Okay.
They take the skin off the walkers, which for some reason is intact enough to survive this process. They tan the skin and they make a suit and they wear the suit. And they all go out and spend their whole day walking along in the herd with the walkers, directing the herd and weaponizing the herd. And then every so often they go off and they camp somewhere without the walkers. And I don't know how that works. So don't ask me. Because apparently they believe this is the new world order, that the walkers are taking over and they must become like the walkers in order to exist in the world. And anybody who's still clinging to humanity is deluded. That's how they feel.
Yeah.
And you know how it is. Like, you find these fringe groups and they have this like whole thing built up around the walkers. And sometimes you nip that in the bud and sometimes it just gets out of control. You have to take it out and tell it to look at the flowers.
But do they have a city? Do they have like their own community?
No, they're nomadic.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They sometimes set up camp, and I'm not sure how exactly they get away from the herd to set up camp, but apparently they're able to do it, and that's never fully explained. There are a lot of problems with the walkers, and that's just one of them.
Yeah. You know who really got hosed is Magna's group. We've built them up so big that they are sort of like, okay, this is like the pivotal thing for they're here, they're in the series, we're gonna build around them. They had nothing tonight.
They had to go out and invent something for themselves, and I like this kind of initiative.
Yeah.
And that's sort of what happens to them in the comics. Like, they make a place for themselves by making themselves useful, and I think that's okay. Like, we don't need them to suddenly be the stars of the show. Like, that wouldn't be okay either.
Yeah. So really, we've got a lot going on in The Walking Dead. We do not need to spend a quarter of the episode with Henry and his new friends.
No, we certainly don't.
Or the blacksmith.
Yeah, you'd be even angrier if we spent another quarter of the episode with Magna.
I would not. Look, if I have a choice between Magna, I'm indifferent on Magna and her group.
Yeah, they're all right.
They're fine.
Yeah, I don't have strong feelings about their presence in the comics either. I think they're a necessary device to bring people back into the universe, and that's what they do. So if a couple of them stick around beyond that, all right.
Okay. Jess, anything else from the comic book zone?
We got to talk about Negan.
Okay.
Because here is what happens with Negan in the comics. And I recognize I'm just spoiling you all over the place because I'm pretty sure that the very next thing that happens on the show is there's going to be a confrontation where Negan is like sitting in Father Gabriel's living room or something like that. Because what happens in the show when he discovers his cell door, what happens in the comics when he discovers that his cell door has been unlocked is he just stays there until Rick comes back. And Rick is like, wait, the door's open. Why didn't you escape? And he's like, because I'm a changed man and I want to show you that you can trust me. So I would be willing to bet that he walks out and he's like sitting in Gabriel's living room and is like, hey, man, I could have gone somewhere. I could have like killed somebody, but I didn't. And I'm here and I'm part of your group now. What are you going to do about that? So that's one way they could do it. Or they could skip way, way ahead, because in the comics, one of the main forces that ends up kind of taking the Whisperers down ends up being Negan through this turn of events where he gets cast out of Alexandria because they're like, you're Negan, you can't stay around here, but you got to go somewhere. And so he's like, all right, and he takes off and that's not totally right. Someone's going to at me about that. Go ahead and at me. But the gist of it is Negan separates himself from Alexandria and he joins the Whisperers for a while. And you think, okay, Negan's going to take over from the inside and he's going to weaponize this group against everybody else. And he's going to be the new big bad. And he kind of gets bored with them and ends up destroying them.
Yeah. All right. So are you saying that there's going to be some sort of a time jump or no?
I don't think there's a time jump. I think everything that happens in the next season half leads up to the fair. And the fair is when you really get the full effect of what the Whisperers are and what they're capable of.
Why on earth does anybody think a fair is a good idea? And this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life.
The fair shows people that you're starting to move past all of the death and suffering and hate of the past, and you're able to.
Well, let me take a wild guess how it's going to turn out.
How do you think it's going to turn out, Rob?
Sounds like it's going to be a real red wedding, this fair.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I mean, if they're following the comics, you're not wrong. And I think I'm here for it. I can't wait to see what happens. And Josh Wigler and I talked about this at great length during our special comic book coverage episode. And I highly recommend comic book fans go back and check that out if you haven't already.
Let me just say, I think a fair is a terrible idea on most days.
That's because you have young children.
No, I would actually like it more with them. If me and Nicole were going to go to, I guess it depends on what kind of fair.
Yeah, it depends if it's a nice fair with they have like you can eat the food and you might like win a stuffed animal. That'd be okay. If it's one of those like sleazy fairs where all the rides are half broken down and like the food gives you food poisoning and, you know, the carnies hit on you. That's no fun.
I haven't had that experience yet. I went to the San Gennaro festival one time. I like that.
Oh, San Gennaro is like 10 times as many people as it needs to be.
Okay. Well, it wasn't that crowded when I went.
Yeah. Word of San Gennaro got around and got out. Now it's like, it's the place to be. And it's kind of like wall to wall people. It's no bueno.
Okay. Jess, anything else from the comic books?
I think those are kind of the two main things. And there's a lot going on now that's like, sometimes it happens to a character in the comics that's not a very important character, but it is an important character on the show, like what happened to Jesus. And other times it's like, you see something happening in the comics that's like more important characters, and then you give it to like some scrubs on the show. And I think they are still doing a fair amount of that mixing and matching. So even if you're a comic book reader and you're 110% spoiled, it's always interesting to see how they remix it.
Yeah. All right. And they may not necessarily do anything. That's why I feel like with this comic book stuff, I feel like that half the time that they don't even do what they did in the comic book.
That's true. They don't. So they might not do any of this the way I think they're going to do it. So you know, next episode, like Negan's the new villain again, and he's built a new sanctuary and he's got new saviors, and it's, you know, we're back on that.
All right. Jessica Lease, outstanding work once again. You've been crushing it all season long here on The Walking Dead. Thank you for being the voice of reason on this podcast.
I do my best, Rob. And thank you for bringing entertaining passion to what you do.
Well, I don't think you get enough credit for being the voice of reason here, keeping me from going even more off the rails.
I try. I do my best, but I'm going to miss this. I mean, what are we going to do between now and February?
Yeah, well, let me know if you have any ideas, because we should figure something out.
We do have some Star Trek Discovery coming down the pike, but that's not till January.
So. Not till January. Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about some pitches offline.
Indeed. I'll come up with something good.
Okay. You could follow the great Jessica Lease on Twitter. She is at Haymaker Hattie. I'm at Rob Sestrino. Be sure to read Josh Wiggler's interview with Jesus up on THR.com. And Game of Thrones rewatch will be back. The season 6 premiere of Game of Thrones coming up with Josh Wiggler and myself. And I'll also get into the House of Cards season 6 finale as well, coming up on probably going to record that one on Monday night. I will talk about the final episode of House of Cards with Zach Brooks here on Post Show Recaps as well. So thank you guys so much for listening to us all season long. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye. Thanks to our friends over at TrueCar for sponsoring this episode of the Walking Dead Recap. Every car comes with its share of stories. That ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up a first date. Maybe it was Enid and Alden's first date. That luxury package you got after that big promotion. Or the mileage you saved by riding your bike all summer. Or the roller skates like Carl and Enid did. While you can't put a price tag on your stories now, with TrueCar, you can at least find out what your car is worth when it's time to sell it or trade it in. Just go to TrueCar and simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Then answer a few questions, navigation and moonroof. That will bump up your car's value. High mileage, you knew it was going to cost you, but now you know how much it dings your wallet so you can plan ahead. And once you're finished, you'll get a true cash offer sent in minutes, which you can take to a local certified dealer to cash out or trade in. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today. True cash offer not available in all areas.